Believe in LA Football Podcast.
Touchdown Rams!
Touchdown UCLA!
Recovered by the Chargers.
The Trojans back in front.
With your hosts, the coach and the Don. Part of the Believe Podcast Network. LA's number one sports podcast network.
What's up, delegates, and welcome back to the Believe in LA Football Podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, Los Angeles' number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in LA and more. We believe in our LA teams. Do you believe? Show is also brought to you by SportsAlDente.com, your recipe for LA sports. Head over there for great draft coverage as we are wrapping that up. We are a mere 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. When you go, use the promo code THECOACHANDTHEDON to get 10% off of any of those subscription packages, give you full access to the site. Have a great show for you today. We are all in on the draft. We are going to be welcomed by Tony Pauline and Chris Tripodi of DraftAnalyst.com, and they are also on the Believe Network hosting the Believe in Draft Analysts podcast. So, talking draft prospects, talking Chargers and Rams draft, we really break it down, but have a lot of fun with those guys. So, here is our interview with Chris and Tony. All right, well, this week on the Believe in LA Football podcast, we are extremely excited to welcome on Tony Pauline and Chris Tripodi, who are part of the Believe in Draft Analyst podcast and also DraftAnalyst.com. Gentlemen, how are we doing? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here. Doing all right. Hope you guys are too.
Oh, we're great. We're can't believe we are just 2 weeks from draft season. Pretty crazy. This process, you know, it's a long process. It starts pretty much year round, but now we are in full swing. But I wanted to just kind of talk to you guys a little bit about how you got into this industry. I mean, I know you do tons of work over there at DraftAnalyst.com, tons of profiles. Tony, you're super connected with a bunch of teams. So I'll start with you, Tony. How did you get into this industry? What made you fall in love with it? And how have you enjoyed doing it for so many years?
Well, I actually trained for the Olympic decathlon for 11 years. So really what this was just an extension of my athletic career. I went through college on a track and field scholarship. And really, scouting is as much trying to identify good athletes as it is good football players. So training for the Olympics for so long, I knew a thing or two about identifying or trying to check out good athletes, since I usually would get my rear end kicked by so many of them much of the time. So basically, the NFL draft, and I started this back in the started to get interested in back in the 80s, mm-hmm. and there before the internet, the advent of the internet, and the information was Pro Football Weekly, the newspaper, and Joel Buxbaum's Pro Football Weekly, the NFL, his NFL draft guide. There really wasn't a lot going around, but I found that I really loved college football, and you know, the NFL draft was one way where you can actually match wits with a GM, match wits with people who are making decisions at the next level. People talk about trades in basketball or trades in baseball and things like that, and they never come to fruition. But in the NFL draft, you can say, I would take this player, this player, this player, this player, and they may not be the players that your favorite team selected. And then literally 2 or 3 years down the line, you could see if you were right or they were right. Now, there's more that goes into it, coaching, player development, things like that. But still, the general basis is you could basically match wits with a GM. That's kind of a lost art these days because a lot of people just concentrate on what happens on draft weekend and they forget about it conveniently oftentimes 2 or 3 years down the road. So I basically did get into it with some of the beat reporters, the New York Jet reporters here in New York, who relied on me for their draft information. Paul Nedell, Brian Burwell, who went to went to Detroit, covered the Lions for years, and recently passed away. I got into it that way because I knew my draft stuff, and they would rely on me for draft information. Which is ironic how things come. They don't say they come full circle because mm-hmm. guys like Steve Cerby and Rich Cimini always call me for your draft information now. But that's how I got into it, and basically moved out on my own.
That's great. So essentially, you went from training for decathlon to kind of starting your own website, scouting reports, and then you had actual reporters coming to you.
Absolutely.
That's great.
I went from reporters to actually agents, to people in the NFL, you know, position coaches and things like that would read my stuff because, like you said, the draft is a year-long process, but I'm one of the few who really write about the draft over the summer and start scouting players over the summer. So, you know, they'll read my stuff, look at my opinions because they know it's firsthand. I watch game film 11 months, almost 11 and a half months a year, and that's how I basically develop myself to get in tune with what's going on in the world of the NFL draft.
Wow, that's really cool, and definitely gives us some motivation to grind even harder. So, Chris, moving on to you, man. Kind of a little bit about your background. How did you get started? We know you've had a relationship with Tony for a lot of years, man. But how did you get going? Did you just have a passion for it, or kind of how did you get broken in?
Same idea, not quite the same story as Tony, really nowhere close to it. But when I graduated college in 2008, I got hooked up with Tony and started writing for his site. I was doing weekly rookie reports and just kind of going over which NFL players had made the transition in their rookie year, who's standing out week to week. So my initial role, at least with Tony, was more of writing about the players once they got to the NFL. Because, you know, as he kind of discussed here, he has everything covered on the college side, you know, scouting guys from when they're freshmen, when they're sophomores, when they start to get on the field. So I would take in the first year players, see what they were doing in the NFL, see how they were translating. And then, you know, that kind of turned into what we have now at draftanalyst.com before, you know, Tony had draftinsider.net, which is kind of where I started working for him and, you know, kind of developed the passion from there to see what draft prospects I wanted to watch, how I liked to see college film, and, you know, what I was enjoying to see on that college level. Because for me, it first started with watching these guys come to the NFL and trying to figure out what made them successful and what made them, you know, adapt to the league quickly. And as Tony said, a lot of it is coaching, a lot of it is player development, which until you really get your hands on and get your feel in it, you may not recognize that. You may just say, oh, this guy's really talented, or this guy just didn't have it. But there's just so much that goes into the process that until you really dive deep into it, you don't realize the full intrigue that it can provide.
Yeah, I think, and that's how, you know, when you find that passion is just the process, as you mentioned, that just caters to our minds and what we love about it. My wife always, I don't want to say gets mad, but she finds it interesting how I can watch the same clip of one play for an hour, and she's like, how in the hell are you still watching that same clip? But it's just the process and what these guys go through and the athletes, as you mentioned, Tony, and how special they are. So speaking of great athletes, I'm curious to hear from both of you, not your top ranked prospects in this year's draft, but who are your five favorite prospects? I'll start with Chris. We'll keep it with you.
Five favorite prospects, guys that I would like probably more than the average. If we'll start at the quarterback position. Personally, I like Jarrett Stidham. I know he had a down year at Auburn this past season. Obviously wasn't the best fit for that offense, but I see a lot of potential in him for where he's going to be drafted. He's not going to be a first-round pick, not even a chance that he's going to be a second-round pick. He might not go in the top 60. So it'll be very interesting to see where he goes, but that's a guy with more potential than his draft slot. He can make all the throws. He really showed out well at the Senior Bowl, making throws down the field, making throws to the flanks. All the quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl were kind of inconsistent. Stidham had a little bit of inconsistency himself too, but I really like a lot of the traits that he brings to the table as a guy who is going to be a pick later on day two, maybe even early on day three, depending how these NFL teams value him, and a guy who does have starter potential for that late pick. Mm-hmm. If we're going to go a couple other positions here, I'll start with wide receiver. I'm personally a big Paris Campbell fan. I know there are a lot of Paris Campbell fans out there, so I'm not on an island here. But when I watch his film, I see a guy who gets in and out of his breaks well. I understand the role he was used in the Ohio State offense. He's a short yardage type of guy. Didn't really threaten deep. But then again, their offense wasn't really predicated on stretching the field downfield. They just had so many playmakers that Dwayne Haskins' job was to put the ball in the hands of those playmakers and let them make plays. And that's what Paris Campbell does, but I see more potential with him. Obviously, he has the speed, ran a 4.31 at the combine, which was tied for tops amongst the wide receivers with Andy Isabella. And I see a guy who has the potential to get deep if an offense wants to use him that way. He's thick. He's not a small guy, so he's able to win out in situations where, you know, he can break tackles after the catch. I think there's a lot more potential in Paris Campbell, and it's one of those things where it's not necessarily that because he wasn't asked to do it at the college level, he can't do it. and it's a bit of a projection with him, but I do like the way that he ends up projecting. If we're going to move kind of to the defensive side, a cornerback that I really like, a guy who I saw at the Senior Bowl was my first full exposure to him, and a guy that I really was intrigued by was Corey Ballantyne out of Washburn. He's a guy who really showed well in man coverage. He came to the combine, he hit all the thresholds he needed to. He's not an elite athlete, but he showed that he could step up with the level of competition with the guys at the Senior Bowl. He's actually been kind of quiet since in terms of the draft process and people hyping him up. So he's going to be a guy that goes on the third day, but he's a guy that can be a nickelback at the NFL level and can provide a lot of value for you at that position and kind of at that point in the draft. Another guy that I really like personally is Bobby Okereke, linebacker out of Stanford. He's fast. He fits what the NFL wants to do now with all their players and, you know, with the kind of way that the game is going. And he's another guy that he's probably going to go early on day three. Maybe there's a chance he could sneak into the end of day two, but he's a guy that he fits everything the league wants to do. And at the very least, he's going to be a very good special teams player and a very good backup at the NFL level. And at the very best, he can be a guy that starts and really fits into a defense and makes a lot of plays on the field. So there's a lot of intrigue with him too. And let's find a fifth player here that I can think of off
I know I put you on the spot, so.
Oh, no worries. I mean, this is what we're here for, and this is, you know, the fun part of talking about the draft is talking about your guys and the guys that you've watched and the guys that you've seen that maybe aren't getting the same hype that you would expect from whatever major outlets or whatever major scouting people, but they're guys that you really trust in the process and guys that you want to see succeed and guys that you want to see do well. You know, another guy for me that I'm very interested in is Max Crosby out of Eastern Michigan. Now, he meets all, you know, not just the testing thresholds that you want out of a defensive end. His three cone was excellent, which is kind of a harbinger for success among that position at the NFL level. I know he's the guy that Tony really likes as well, so maybe I stole one of Tony's guys here, but in the end, I mean, Max Crosby is, he's a guy who's not going to go, you know, and all these guys that we're talking about, except maybe Paris Campbell that I mentioned, you know, they're not going to go in the first two rounds. Maybe Crosby can sneak in at the end, but he's a really intriguing edge prospect. He's got the production, he's got the athleticism, and he's a guy that really could provide a nice spark for some teams off the edge.
Yeah, Corey Ballantyne is definitely, I know we like him over here. Shout out to the MIAA. Yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty solid pick somewhere in the, you know, early mid rounds. So I really like that pick as well. But Tony, moving on to you, your five favorite prospects that I know you've seen so many prospects over the years. I'm sure you fall in love with certain guys, and not necessarily just because of their talent, but just because of the overall prospect they are. But this year, who do you think your top five would be in terms of favorite?
Yeah, well, Chris did steal Max Crosby. I mean, he was a guy that I wrote about actually last June when he was coming out of his sophomore season, because I identified him as a next level prospect. Granted, I had him graded as a late round choice. I think he's going to go more potentially late second day. I always like the guys that at this point in time, people seem to be downgrading for no reason. There is a phrase that we've used for years is called paralysis by overanalysis. And they look at these guys and they punch holes in their games that really aren't there. It's because there's too much time on their hands. Or I like the guys that I've been able to identify early in their college career as next level players, and now they're rated highly. My number one guy would be Cleveland Farrell of Clemson. He's number seven on my board right now. People think he's going to be a mid to late first round choice. If you watch Cleveland Farrell the past 3 years, all he does is make plays from his defensive end position, makes plays in the backfield as a pass rusher, makes plays out in space. Terrific athlete. Dominated Jonah Williams during that national championship game. In my opinion, Cleveland Farrell is this year's version of Deron Payne. What do I mean by that? Last year, Deron Payne was my number eighth ranked player in the draft. People were saying he was going to be a late first round pick. Went in the middle of the first round to the Washington Redskins. Did a bang up job. People were saying he's a two down defender. He can't rush the passer. Bull. Watch the tape. He was a terrific player. And I think that's the same thing with Cleveland Farrell. Outside of the top 10, I think Farrell is going to be great value. I love Eric McCoy of Texas A&M, or I love what's happening with Eric McCoy of Texas A&M. After his redshirt freshman season, I wrote that this kid is going to be a top 100 selection in the draft, could be a first rounder. He's inching up into the early part of round two. A terrific center, a guy you can use in a zone blocking system, moves well on his feet. He's nasty. He's tough. He's smart. I love his entire game. I've loved watching him develop his game the past 3 years. Same thing with Chris Lindstrom of Boston College. If you read my weekly Risers and Sliders column that I've had for years, going back to when I was with SportsIllustrated.com back in 2002, I identified Lindstrom in October of 2017 as a next-level prospect when he played tackle for Boston College. Again, a guy who I love his development. He's just been on a straight shot north up draft boards because he's such a he's shown consistent development in his game. And that's what you really like to see, is you want to see guys who get better every year. Lindstrom's one of them. I like Mike Edwards, the safety from Kentucky. You know, people, I don't know why people don't rank this guy higher. If you watch the film, he's a complete safety. He's a tough run defender who's terrific in coverage. You can play him over the slot receiver. You can play him at free safety. You can play him at strong safety. You could use him in zone. I just, again, it's paralysis by overanalysis with Mike Edwards. He's a solid athlete. He's a very good athlete for a safety that I think has got the versatility to be used in a variety of areas. I also like Trevon Coney of Notre Dame. I mean, the guy is just a great football player. Coming into the season, scouts graded him as a street free agent, which basically meant that they didn't expect him to get drafted. They thought he was one of those guys that wasn't going, that would barely make the 80-man roster. Yet Coney, if you watch the film, and again, I keep going back to that, watch the film. All he did was make plays on the football for the past 3 years at Notre Dame, constantly around the ball. May not be the greatest athlete in the world, a lot like Manti Te'o, the former Notre Dame linebacker, and the fact that, you know, he would see the play and he would know what was going to happen before it happens, and it allows him to get to the spot to make the play. So I think Trevon Coney, another guy, he's not going to wow you with the athletic workouts, but just watch the film, and he's never has mental lapses. He's constantly around the ball making positive plays.
Yeah, I really love that you brought up Farrell. And this could be a perfect segue into our more LA-focused draft talk. But I actually have Farrell mocked number four overall to Oakland. I feel like he's just a Mayock kind of guy. I don't know if you think that's a little too high, but the fact that you have him ranked pretty high kind of solidifies that. I feel kind of good about that pick now.
I had him mocked to the New York Jets at number three for the longest time. In fact, again, I go back to Rich Samedi of ESPN. He called me before the national championship game because he was doing an article on the draft prospects in the national championship game and who could be good for the Jets at number three. And I mentioned Cleveland Farrell. I said I think he would solve the Jets' pass rushing problems of the past 20 years. They haven't had a pass rusher since John Abraham, you know, 10 years ago. And he's not going to go that high. I mean, Farrell's probably going to fall out of the top 12. But remember, you know, as I said earlier, the problem with the draft these days, and I've been in the draft game for 25-plus years, is everybody looks what happens on draft day. Who got the most right in their first round? Who got the most correct in their top 100? Then when draft weekend is over, they forget about it. But the draft is about what's going to happen 2 or 3 years down the road. So even if Cleveland Farrell is the 15th or 16th player selected, let's see what happens 2 or 3 years down the road compared to what people are saying on draft weekend of 2019.
Yes, absolutely. Totally agree with you, Tony. We could dive in now, and you talked about the Jets really needing a pass rusher. Well, we look at the Chargers and the Rams, the two L.A. football squads that we cover here. Both of them had really successful years. Obviously, the Rams were the Super Bowl runners-up. But let's start with the Chargers, who have the 28th pick overall. And Tony and Chris, you guys can both jump in here, you know, whatever you feel like. But where do you think the top needs for the Chargers are at the 28th pick?
For me, when I look at the Chargers, I see a couple holes on the offensive line, potentially. You know, I see a very interesting player that could fit in L.A., and that's Cody Ford out of Oklahoma. Now, a lot of people are uncertain whether Ford's going to be a tackle, whether Ford's going to be a guard. We have Cody Ford on our guard board, and he's really a guy that he's really good small area player, and he has good athleticism too, which a lot of people weren't expecting to see from him. You know, he could fit in at right tackle. He could fit in at guard. I feel like both of those positions are places where the Chargers could use some help. So I'd be very intrigued to see if they'd be interested in a guy like Cody Ford as an offensive lineman who could fill a couple holes. And then there's also a safety need in San Diego. And I mean, I think a guy that we actually talked about recently on our podcast, who's really rising up boards quickly as a versatile guy, can play safety. Some teams even like him as corner. And that's Juan Thornhill out of Virginia. You know, he's a guy that tested through the roof at the combine, played well at the Senior Bowl. He's really been everything that people wanted to see from him in the pre-draft process. And, you know, he'd be an interesting fit, I think, at the end of the first round for LA as well.
Yeah, I think they would like to get an upgrade at right tackle. I just don't know that right tackle is going to be there. You know, Brandon Mebane just recently signed, and the guy's, what, 67 years old? He's going to start collecting Social Security checks soon. So yeah. I think a defensive tackle would be considered there. You know, for the longest time, I thought that Dexter Lawrence of Clemson would be a good fit for the Chargers. I don't think that Dexter Lawrence is going to be there. Excuse me, because he's moving up draft boards. You know, a guy, Jerry Tillery of Notre Dame, is a guy that's got to get some conversation or has got to be in the conversation. He's a guy who would ordinarily be a late first round pick. He could still be a late first round pick, but because of the depth of talent at the defensive line, a guy like Tillery is going to get pushed down further in the draft than he usually would. Somebody who I like, who really fits the mold of a San Diego Chargers defensive tackle, Draymond Jones of Ohio State. A little bit undersized, but very explosive, very athletic. A guy who's a good pass rusher, can also stuff the run. I think Tillery or Draymond Jones are guys that they would consider, assuming that Dexter Lawrence is off the board when they're called to the clock in round one.
And Tony, I'm glad you brought up that interior defensive line for the Chargers, because I totally agree. Do you think there's any chance, have you heard any rumblings about Jeffrey Simmons possibly being at that slot? I know that he's towards ACL, so we're not really sure when he will be available. But do you think that could be a target for the Chargers, even if they trade back? Or is there any chance that Simmons could end up being a Charger?
Not if they expect him to play in 2019, because Simmons' injury was late in the process. Remember, it happened right before the combine as he was training for the combine. So that's an 8 to 10 month injury. So you really don't, you know, if you're selecting Jeffrey Simmons, you're basically going to assume that he's going to redshirt in 2019. And even if there are reports that he could play in 2019, do you really want him to play in 2019 and maybe damage that knee further or not have it, you know, rehab or repair properly? So could he be there? I absolutely think he could be there. I have him pegged to one of the Oakland Raiders spots at the top of round two. If the Chargers draft him, you know, again, it's more with 2020 in mind than 2019.
Yeah, and so real quick, going back to Tillery, because I like that pick too. You know, Telasco, GM over there, probably one of the more underrated GMs in the NFL, has done a tremendous job in the last couple drafts, getting great value, obviously having Derwin James drop to him last year. Probably fell out of his chair there. But he's had a reputation, and a good one at that, at always taking guys with high character. And not saying Tillery doesn't have character, but, you know, had a couple issues throughout his career. You know, freshman getting suspended for the bowl game. Sophomore year, he had that Ndamukong Suh-like game against USC. Is that concerning at all? And do you think that takes them off the Chargers draft board? Or do you think that's enough in the past where it shouldn't affect his draft stock?
Yeah, I think the big problem with Jerry Tillery is the inconsistency on film. You know, he's a streaky player. He'll be dominant for a series at a time, and then he'll disappear. And the personality issues or the minor off the field scrapes, I think, are just that minor. I don't think it's really going, unless something else pops up, and I haven't heard any additional red flags on him, I don't think it's going to affect his draft stock. I think what has happened is during the interview process, they're going to ask him, you know, why were you so great on these 3 and 4 series in this specific game, and then you disappeared. That's the issue with Tillery.
Yeah. So one more thing with the Chargers, and then we'll move on to the Rams and then let you guys go. Appreciate you again joining us on this Saturday. But so obviously Philip Rivers getting up there in age, so quarterback of the future is going to become into play at some point. You know, you guys talked about it on your last episode of the Believe in Draft Analyst podcast. You probably know it's coming up, but Josh Rosen. So I think you guys talked about how Washington's probably the landing spot. Is there a chance, though, Chargers make a play, or do you think they address maybe just grabbing a quarterback in later rounds or even wait till next year?
It's going to really depend on compensation when it comes down to it, because the Chargers, the way their picks are set up, they have pick 28 and pick 60. So they're not going to be giving up that first-round pick for Josh Rosen, most likely. Seeming at this point, every bit of the momentum is swaying towards Josh Rosen is not going to fetch a first-round pick for Arizona. And then you have to think about the teams that are willing to give the second round pick. They're all probably going to be picking ahead of the Chargers. So it would come to a situation where, and this is something that we mentioned a couple of weeks back when we first started talking about Josh Rosen, is it might end up being a later pick in 2019 and a 2020 pick that could end up being some compensation for Josh Rosen. And if the Chargers are looking to get something done, that's probably the direction that they're going to have to go, considering where their picks lie this year.
Yeah, and that's what I reported basically from the combine when I broke that story, is that the compensation, what I was told back during the combine was the compensation was a first-round pick in 2020. You know, it depends on what the Cardinals want to do. I mean, the Cardinals are in a situation right now where if they take Kyler Murray, they got to win right away, or everyone's going to get fired, because you move up, you take Josh Rosen, and then you make a questionable hire at the coaching position with Cliff Kingsbury, and then you're going to select Kyler Murray with the top pick of the draft, because that's who Cliff Kingsbury wants, and then trade Josh Rosen for basically less than what you gave away for him and chose him at in 2018. So what am I rambling on about? I mean, do the Arizona Cardinals, are they okay saying, all right, we'll take that pick in 2020? Or are they saying, no, we need that pick now because we have so many holes now and we got to get players on the field in 2019 that are going to help the team and help Kyler Murray to produce in 2019 or protect Kyler Murray in 2019? We'll take the pick now. We're going to forsake the future pick. I mean, it's sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. Mm-hmm. The wiser thing would be to take the pick in 2020, the earlier pick, the first-round pick. I don't know that Steve Keim and everybody else in Arizona has that sort of enough room on the leash, because if they make this move and it looks like they're going to take Kyler Murray coupled with the hiring of Cliff Kingsbury, they better play real good football in 2019 or a lot of people are going to get fired.
Absolutely. And, you know, since we're on the topic real quick, I'm just curious your evaluation, since obviously you've watched extensive film on both of them, I'm sure. You, if you're GM, do you stick with Rosen or do you like the move of them moving on and going with Murray? How do you evaluate them versus each other?
Josh Rosen is far and away the better quarterback. He's definitely the better passer. Mm-hmm. If Josh Rosen was in this year's draft, he would be ranked as the number one quarterback. He's the most accurate. He's the most polished passer. He has it going on between the ears. He did a great job at UCLA, elevating the play of his teammates. The problem with Josh Rosen is, and I mentioned this in the lead up to the 2018 draft, is he has a personality that rubs people the wrong way. And that's the fact of the matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically what I've been told is he's arrogant to the point of it being a fault. And he comes across, maybe not purposely, as condescending at times, which is why I think that the New York Giants will not end up with Josh Rosen because get some pushback there because of the Maras, that's not their type of quarterback. So, you know, there's Josh Rosen on the field, and then there's Josh Rosen off the field. Josh Rosen on the field is a much better quarterback prospect than Kyler Murray. Josh Rosen off the field, you know, you're kind of tiptoeing around, and you're hoping that, you know, you don't step on the landmine because he could upset and make a lot of people cranky, which is what I'm told has happened in the front office with some people in the front office in Arizona.
Makes sense. Go ahead, Chris.
The thing too about Josh Rosen is you're selling extremely low on him for several reasons. Not only because if they take Kyler Murray number one, the leverage is gone because the teams know that the Arizona Cardinals are going to have to get rid of Josh Rosen in that scenario. They're not going to be able to keep him and Kyler Murray around. That's going to be a problem. And it's possible that Rosen's personality could cause some issues in that situation too. So Rosen is an absolute goner if Kyler Murray is the pick. So the leverage is lost there, and the leverage is also lost because of the disastrous season that Arizona had last season. And whether you want to put that on Josh Rosen, whether you want to put that on the supporting cast around him, which I kind of fall in the latter phase there. I mean, you know, Tony had Rosen as his number one quarterback last year. I had Rosen as my number one quarterback last year. I mean, the guy was, in our opinion, the best pure passer in the draft. And he went to a situation where he didn't have time to throw. He didn't have the best receiver situation. Christian Kirk was hurt a little bit. Larry Fitzgerald's getting up there in age. They have very limited depth there. They didn't have a tight end. You know, they were running David Johnson up the middle 15 times a game rather than using him in the passing game. So a lot of it is Josh Rosen's stock is very low right now because of the personality issues, because of the lack of leverage with Kyler Murray talk going number one, because of the season he had last year. So you're not going to get a lot on that investment. They traded picks to move up to get him last year. They'd be lucky to get those picks back that they traded up to get him with, let alone the first round pick that was included in that deal. So from the terms of an opportunity cost standpoint, as Tony said, this has to work, and it has to work quickly, because if it doesn't, people are going to look back and they're going to say, you moved up to draft a quarterback in the first round. It didn't work out. You gave up on him at 20 cents on the dollar. You drafted another guy, number one overall, to appease your new head coach, who a lot of people have questions about. It's just the whole situation is set up for either is shooting straight up the board and it working immediately and then looking great, or it's going to fall apart and they're going to look really, really bad. And I don't really think there's a middle ground there.
Yeah, it's honestly fascinating how this rumor came out back in, what, late January, early February as a rumor, and then now it's basically come to fruition and is all but going to happen. So, well, quickly then, we'll touch on the Rams briefly. Pick 31. Oddly enough, they have very similar needs as the Chargers. Me and Talon were kind of joking pre-show. We saw somewhere, I can't remember what outlet, but that they're someone was talking about them picking in the second round, even though they don't have a second round pick. So we were kind of making the rumor that maybe they're talking about trading back. Have either of you heard anything front office wise, or are they talking trade back, or do they go with offensive lineman or interior defensive lineman maybe in that first round?
Well, I mean, usually what happens in trade back is because a player has fallen deep into the first round that a team at the top of round two wants to trade up for. So usually trade backs in the late part of round one happen as we get moved towards the late part of round one. I've heard absolutely nothing about them trading down. I think that they have a big need at center when they did not re-up John Sullivan's contract. I don't know. I like Brian Allen as a player. I like Brian Allen in college. I just don't know that he's a consistent NFL starter. I think that it may be a situation where if they like Garrett Bradbury, who's the top-rated center from North Carolina State, who is the top-rated center in this year's draft, bar none, and he'd be a terrific fit for that system, they may actually have to move up a couple slots to select Garrett Bradbury to fill that need at offensive center.
Yeah, I love you. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, yeah, Bradbury, for me, is also an option for them at that spot simply because of the need. I mean, their first two picks last year, granted, they didn't come until the third round and the fourth round with Joe Noteboom and Brian Allen. But it seems like they knew that they were going to have these holes, and they decided, let's see if we can take those guys and, you know, plug them in next year when these holes open up potentially. You know, we don't know how they feel about their internal development or anything like that. So certainly Bradbury's an option. What Tony mentioned about trading back, a lot of it might depend on where the quarterbacks go. You know, Kyler Murray will obviously be gone. Dwayne Haskins will be gone. Drew Locke will probably be gone. But if there is a Daniel Jones on the board and some team picking, you know, early to mid portion of the second round wants to move up, that last couple picks there in the first round is a great spot to move up for a quarterback because you get that extra fifth year option on them. The Vikings did it with Teddy Bridgewater a few years ago. So if a team likes Daniel Jones enough, don't have a first round pick, they might call the Rams and they might say, hey, you know, we're interested in this pick. What do you want for it? So that they can move up, take a quarterback, get that fifth year option and save money, save that 1 year on the large free agent contract that they would expect that quarterback to get if they end up hitting.
Yeah. Yeah. That center position is not one that I really thought about being that first round pick, but yeah, a guy like Bradbury, if he is there, or do you think Eric McCoy, if he's sitting there at 28, do you think that's the guy that they could go get?
Eric McCoy will be there at 28. The question is do they think Eric McCoy is worth the 28th selection of the draft? I mean, it may be one of those situations where if they like McCoy and they feel that they could get him, you know, at pick 42 or something like that, do they trade down? McCoy again would be a terrific fit for that system. I mean, he's mobile, he's very effective on the second level. He's got a best footballs ahead of him. I just don't know at this point in time that he's worth the, you know, 31st pick of the draft.
Sure. Yeah, that's a very solid point.
With the Rams, though, what's interesting, sorry, Talon, cut you off, is there, we were joking about their draft because, I mean, you can't fault them with their success going to the Super Bowl, but they draft much different than a lot of other teams. I mean, obviously taking Gerald Everett in the second round 2 years ago, and so that it wouldn't shock me, to say the least, if they ended up, you know, valuing him at 31.
Could be. I mean, if it's a need, you got a what looks like a franchise quarterback there. You better be able to protect him. I mean, you got to be strong in the middle of the line. And again, I mean, Brian Allen was a very good player in the college level, but he's short. He's not really a big guy. Is he a viable starter for 16 weeks and then the playoffs, or is he better off just basically being an inexpensive utility backup at both center and guard?
Yeah, that's the big question, the $750,000 question, if you will. So if they don't go center and they stay put at 31, what secondary, or not really secondary, but what is another position of need that you think they could target?
I mean, if you look at some of the names we mentioned before with the Chargers, Jeffrey Simmons, Dexter Lawrence, Jerry Tillery, I mean, those are guys that it'll be really interesting to see if they're there. You know, as Tony said, Dexter Lawrence is kind of sliding up board, so maybe he's not there at 31, and, you know, if they like him enough, maybe they move up. But I don't know why you would move up in a situation like that when you have guys that are going to fall. Again, this is a win-now team, so with Jeffrey Simmons, are they willing to draft a player in the first round who's unlikely to help them this season and is more of a 2020 stash, or do they want a guy who is going to help them now? I feel like they would more lean towards maybe a Jerry Tillery, just because he could help them this year, and they want to maximize that window on Goff's rookie contract. So I feel like Simmons is probably an unlikely pick for the Rams. But if you look at some of those D tackles, the same ones really that we mentioned for the Chargers, as you guys said, they have a lot of similar needs here in the trenches. I feel like a lot of NFL teams these days have needs in the trenches, especially in the offensive line. But that would be probably the direction I would see the Rams going if they decide to roll with their youngsters on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd also, maybe if there's a good edge rusher, outside type guy, pass rusher that kind of slips through the cracks, they signed Dante Fowler to a one-year deal. Linebacker would be another sort of situation, and safety. I mean, Eric Weddle was a solid free agent signing to fill a spot, but you know, like Eric Mebane, he's going to start collecting Social Security checks real soon. Mm-hmm. So if there's a good safety there, we keep talking about Juan Thornhill, who's moving up draft boards, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson of Florida, who I've graded just outside of round one, a terrific free safety type that's basically, he's got great cover skills. You can put him over the slot receiver, would be a great counterpoint, a great complement to, say, John Johnson's style of play. I think free safety would also be a consideration because, again, you know, it's more than what's going to happen. Granted, they're built to win now, and when you get as far as they did last year, you want to take the next step. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult, but you also got to think about what's going to happen 2 or 3 years down the line. And safety like Juan Thornhill or Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would be a great fit as when Eric Weddle eventually retires. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Chris and Tony, we truly appreciate you coming on. We love talking drafts. That's something we enjoy. I'm going to get you out of here on this. Are you guys Jets guys or Giants guys?
Oh boy. Well, let's put it this way. I'm a Jet season ticket holder. Okay. I haven't missed a Jet home game in 39 years, but I'll tell you this, I'm not a Jets fan anymore. I just go and barbecue my ribs in the parking lot and drink beer and just go and shake my head at the games. The New York Jets have beat me into apathy.
You're not alone.
I'm also a Jets season ticket holder, and I'm not quite at that apathetic point that Tony is. You know, if I go and tailgate, I'm going to go into the stadium and I'm going to watch the game, and, you know, I'm going to go from there. But yeah, you have two Jets season ticket holders on the line here, and, you know, we're hoping that things turn around quickly, and, you know, hopefully Sam Darnold continues to develop, and, you know, we'll see where that goes. But, you know, I'm not as apathetic as Tony is at this point. I'm a little bit younger, so I think that time will eventually come if this continues at this rate.
Just wait.
But I try to be positive, but, you know, a lot of times it's hard, and you really just want to see evidence before you really dive back all in.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's put it this way. You talk about the Jets turning it around quickly. You know, I'm an older balding guy, and I think I got a better chance of waking up tomorrow sporting an afro like Jimi Hendrix had at Woodstock than the Jets do of turning it around quickly. So that tells you where I'm at.
Okay. And Tony has been beaten down for a very long time.
Yeah, clearly.
Just out of curiosity, I have to ask: have you guys ever tailgated or hung out with Fireman Ed?
I have not. No.
No. Fireman Ed is, I mean, I know he's got great national attention, and but Fireman Ed is a fair weather fan.
When he left for like Jets, 3 years.
What's that?
He left for like 3 years. Yeah, recently.
He comes like fair weather. He comes when the weather's nice. I mean, he's, you know, on the outside, he's known as, you know, the premier Jet fan. But first thing is this: you have to know about Fireman Ed. He was in the right place at the right time. What do I mean by that? That J-E-T-S, Jets chant started back in Shea Stadium, upstairs where I used to sit in the closed end of Shea Stadium. Mm. Then when the Jets moved to a Giant Stadium, what happened was we used to go from end zone to end zone, and the guy who brought it over to Giant Stadium was actually a New York City police officer by the name of Donnie Schaefer, who knew my father. My dad was NYPD for 23 years. So it was Donnie Schaefer, New York City police officer, who actually brought the chant to Giant Stadium from Shea Stadium. Now, what happened with Fireman Ed was he had the seats in the lower level, and the Jets were playing the Miami Dolphins or something. Marv Albert was doing the game with Bill Parcells. I still have that game somewhere on film. Mm. And then all of a sudden, the camera pans down to fire, you know, to these two guys, one big rotund guy who's carrying another guy on his shoulders, and they're doing the chant. And what happened was Fireman Ed was wearing a number 42 jersey, which was Bruce Harper, a former Jet, a beloved Jet. Mm-hmm. And Marv Albert kind of made the joke as well. I wondered what Bruce Harper was doing these days. So the camera would then consistently pan down to Fireman Ed week in and week out. To his credit, I mean, he capitalized on it. He made a lot of money. He was getting free tickets. But the thing is when things went south, as they often do with the New York Jets, Fireman Ed was nowhere to be seen. And, you know, he's probably come to two or three games the past 4 years. So the short answer of your question is no. The long answer is no, I have no interest.
Yeah. He was the original viral sensation, I guess, and capitalized on it.
Actually, right, before there was a viral sensation.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
That's great. Well, hey, at least MetLife is beautiful. I went to a game there, it's probably 5 years ago now. I'm originally from Denver, so I bleed orange and blue. So I went to a Broncos-Jets game there. So we had fun tailgating, hanging out with Jets fans. So at least you got a nice stadium there.
MetLife?
Yeah, MetLife.
Oh, MetLife is garbage. I'm sorry. I mean, it's good if you go once in a while, but if you go every week, it's the old stadium. The only problem was if you're a Jets fan, it was called Giant Stadium.
Yeah.
But the old stadium was fantastic. It was easy in, easy out, the stadium, the parking lot. I mean, everything was very convenient. If you go every week to this stadium, as I do for the Jet home games, and Chris goes to a lot of games, everything is just a hassle and it's very inconvenient. I mean, from getting through security, it was just, you know, I don't want to be offensive, but Stevie Wonder could have designed a better stadium than what's there. If you're going every week, it's abysmal if you go every week. It's just very inconvenient. You know, let's put it this way: in New York, we've got three new stadiums. We've got MetLife, we've got Yankee Stadium, we got Citi Field. Mm-hmm. Yankee Stadium, obviously. Citi Field is the was the new stadium for the Mets. Citi Field is a gem. Citi Field is an upgrade.
Beautiful.
In every aspect possible. It's an absolute joy to go to. MetLife was not an upgrade over the former Giant Stadium. All it was a money grab.
Mm. MetLife is similar to Yankee Stadium in that sense, where, and I'm a big Yankees fan, but the old stadium was nicer. The new stadium, it just doesn't really do it. It's kind of a downgrade. Mm. Whereas Citi Field, compared to Shea, Citi Field is gorgeous. It really is. But yeah, MetLife and Yankee Stadium to me are kind of similar in that sense, where they're new, but they're not massive upgrades. It is difficult to get out of the stadium when the game ends, just because of the way they have, like, kind of the traffic patterns going around, and you're like walking in circles to get down from one floor to the next floor. I don't deal with traffic or the parking lot really, because I live in the city, so I just take the train over, take the path or whatever it is, so I don't have to drive in or anything like that and deal with traffic leaving. But the one time I did, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, the game ended at 4, and I got back to my apartment in Brooklyn at 8:30.
Yep.
I was sitting in traffic for like 2.5, 3 hours.
That was us.
Miserable. miserable. And yeah, it's a lot better now that I take the train and you just go in, you go out, you're back home in like an hour and a half or an hour 45 minutes. So it's much preferable. But yeah, the traffic kind of in the stadium and how everything works there, it's not the most efficient setup.
Yeah.
It's funny you guys bring that up. And I know we're completely off topic at this point, but hey, we're down this rabbit hole. I'm gonna dig deeper. WrestleMania was just held at MetLife. Yeah. And I heard just horror stories of people trying to get out of there. The show ended at like 12:30. The transits had stopped. They weren't running anymore. Ubers were like $300, and like people were there. The show ended at 12:30. Didn't get out of the stadium till like 4 or 5 in the morning.
Wow. Yeah, that's listen. The fact is, this is like I said. I go to the Jet home games every week, and in the old stadium, I would stay to the end of the game, and we would tailgate after the game for a little while to let the traffic go through. Now it's a situation where, you know, I hope the game is basically in hand either way by the end of the third quarter, so I can get the heck out of there, so I can be one of the first people out there. And, you know, you hate to say it, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the parking lots are a disaster. You know, the traffic, the Jets can't control that. The MetLife can't control that. I mean, mm-hmm. The traffic is the traffic. You got the George Washington Bridge there. There's going to be traffic. Except there's not a lot of traffic to Jet games because a lot of people don't go to Jet games anymore. But it's just getting through. And, you know, you talk about the Ubers. It's a disaster. Like I said, two words to describe the whole experience is inconvenient and hassle. Granted, if you're in for if you're a visiting fan in for the Denver Broncos game, I know they played Denver at home last year, and you go to a Jet game, there's just as many fans for the opposing team than there are for the Jets. In fact, when the Patriots are there, it's usually 3-1 in favor of Patriot fans, so you're always tussling with them.
It's true.
And it's fun, you know, if you're doing that on a one-off type of basis. But when you're doing it on a weekend, week out, I didn't hear that. I knew WrestleMania was there. I didn't hear it. Doesn't surprise me at all. Does not surprise me at all. Let's put it this way. They have three sections, and the stadium is so poorly designed. At the end of the game, you have escalators that go up to the section 100, 200, 300. At the end of the game, they have to shut down one of the escalators going down from section 300 to control the crowd, because it's so poorly built, they can't have all the people going down the escalators. They're not dedicated escalators for each section as it was in the old stadium. It's all one set of escalators for all three sections. So they have to shut down one of the escalators that goes down from the section 300 to the 200s and then eventually to the 100 section to control the crowd. And, you know, this is a $1.6 billion the stadium cost $1.6 billion to build. How they didn't foresee this was going to be a problem is just it's typical of New York. That's what happens.
Piggyback off Tony, what Tony just said, I mean, my dad recently had hip surgery like 2 years ago, and he hasn't gone to a Jet game with me since because it's just a hassle to walk around. It's a hassle to get in, get out. He's just like, I'm not mobile enough to do this. And maybe if, as Tony said, those escalators were working, things like that might change it. But, you know, they're taking, I mean, my dad's, you know, pushing 70, but he's to the point where he's just not as mobile as he once was. And as a result, it prevents him from enjoying the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of a shame. Well, I don't get to go to the games with my dad anymore. Like, what's going on?
That's what it's all about. That's a bummer. Well, when Kroenke's Mecca opens out here in L.A., we'll have you back on. We'll do a little of the stadium talk. Let's do crosstalk on stadiums.
Well, that new stadium in L.A. is supposed to be fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to be state-of-the-art. It looks beautiful. I mean, it's the whole outterior of it, it's all done, so now they're just kind of, you know, they're a year away, so they're just finalizing all the inside, but it's going to be beautiful.
But the inside is supposed to be like technology, you know, into the future, right? Where you can put your phone there and you get all kinds of, you know, it's supposed to be like really, you know, futuristic as far as what they're going to be able to offer.
Yeah, it's all Wi-Fi. Order straight from your seat. So they're definitely enhancing the fan experience, trying, I guess, to inhibit the convenience as opposed to inhibit it. So we'll see how it goes. We'll keep you posted. So. But guys, thanks so much for coming on. Where can everyone find you before we let you go?
Well, everything's it can be centralized at draftanalyst.com. We'll have rankings of over 1,000 players eligible for this year's draft. We'll probably have close to a little bit under 700 scouting reports. So, you know, forget about who the Rams or the Chargers are drafting just from rounds 1 through 7. But after the draft, they're probably going to sign 15 to 20 free agents, and I'm sure you'll be able to find scouting reports on those players at draftanalyst.com. And, of course, we have the podcast once a week where we break news, where people basically accuse me of reporting fake news, but we'll see what happens.
you've been pretty spot on. We've listened to almost everyone. So, well, guys,
thanks
you.
Thanks for the support, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. We'll be in touch. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, okay?
Thanks for having us.
You too. Enjoy, guys. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Take care.